It's payback time.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Interest rates in Japan have been low for years. It was easy to borrow money cheaply in Japan and invest in other countries offering higher rates, like the U.S. A no-brainer. It produced a virtual money machine, an ATM on steroids, spitting out Japanese currency. Those cheap yen created temptation to make risky investments and helped to create a huge credit bubble in the U.S. Inside the bubble, among other things, lots of subprime mortgages. We know all too well that bubble has burst. Cleaning the mess means paying back that borrowed Japanese money. As that happens, the yen gains strength. It did so overnight. Japan's currency reached a 14-month high against the dollar, but that's not good for Japanese exporters. Economist Andrew Hilton.
The Japanese economy is driven by the global demand for Japanese exports. That means Toyotas, it means Hondas, it means Nissans, and it means the thousands and thousands of very high-quality goods that we will learn to live on. And Americans are going to buy fewer of them, and since exports are what is driving the Japanese economy itself may turn down.
So, Japan's stock market fell overnight and fell hard. The Nikkei recorded its biggest one-day drop since the September 11th terrorist attacks, a loss of more than 5%. And in Hong Kong, the market posted its biggest point decline in 6 years. For Wall Street, though, a mesmerizing recovery yesterday. The Dow battled back from being down 340 points to finish with just a 15-point loss, the average ending at 12,845. The S&P rose 4 to 1411, but the NASDAQ gave back 7 points to 2,451. Did you hear the story on Countrywide Financial? Yesterday, the largest mortgage lender in the U.S. tapped into $11.5 billion in emergency credit to fund its operations. Mortgage lenders like Countrywide are having trouble getting cash in the current credit crunch. But New York Senator Charles Schumer has an idea that could help. Jill Barchet reports.
We all know Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac deal in home loans that are $417,000 or less. They pool those loans and resell them to investors. But Fannie and Freddie also run investment portfolios that can buy almost any kind of mortgage, even subprime and jumbo. They've made lots of money this way. But after a series of accounting scandals, regulators capped the portfolios last year. Senator Schumer wants to raise the cap. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. She says that could help companies like Countrywide.
They can't sell off the mortgages that they're holding, and if they can sell off some of the loans they've got, that gives them more cash to turn around and lend.
If Fannie and Freddie buy those loans, they'll inject much-needed liquidity into the system. But ordinary mortgages are selling just fine, regulators say. They don't want Fannie and Freddie being used to prop up the subprime and jumbo markets. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Skype, the online telephone service, crashed yesterday. Millions were incommunicado, and some problems continue today. But the company doesn't fully understand what happened. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Many of Skype's 220 million users were left floundering yesterday after a worldwide network failure. The service, which allows users to call each other for free over their computers, was down for much of the day. There are still some problems logging on this morning. The company says a flaw in software linking users to servers is most likely to blame. But Skype doesn't understand precisely why this flaw caused the whole network to crash. Technology writer Barry Fox believes there may have been a virus attack. He says the incident underlines the fundamental flaw in Skype.
Any service that relies on computers around the world which are in homes and not under the control of the organizing company has a weakness.
While Skype describes itself as highly reliable, it does point out it is not a replacement for a conventional telephone service and should not be relied on in emergencies. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with Teach for America to help children in under-resourced public schools achieve academic success in math and science. TeachForAmerica.org.
Something's missing in London this week. The sound of Big Ben. For the fourth time in a century and a half, the bongs at Britain's Houses of Parliament have been silenced. Ben's getting a tune-up to get him ready for his 150th anniversary in 2009. Mike McCann is keeper of the great clock. Mike, what are you doing to Big Ben?
Well, the clock was working perfectly, I have to say. But the reason we've stopped it is because we have a lot of wear on the bearings of two of the barrels. One controls the clock itself, and the other one is the strike or hour train, which rings Big Ben, the hour bell. Now, the bearings on those were getting very, very worn. We believe they're original, so they're probably 148 years old, just to give you some idea. And like anything mechanical, of course, it does wear out. The reason we're doing it now is because it's the 150th anniversary of the clock in 2 years' time. So we didn't really want to be doing all this work next year or the year after.
So is this wear and tear that you're describing affected the accuracy of the clock?
Remarkably, it hasn't really. We were actually quite surprised when we saw the amount of wear yesterday. But of course, one of the reasons for that is the Victorians did what we call over-engineering. Everything they made was twice the size it needed to be. Are you with me? So if that had been a modern piece of equipment, it would have stopped years ago, I expect. But because it's Victorian and it's all made so well and so large, it actually carried on running remarkably well.
How long do you think what you're doing will hold?
Well, I mean, in theory, there's no reason why the work we're doing now shouldn't last 50 years. But that's very much what we're aiming for.
Mike, tell me a little bit about, I mean, how do you get to the top of the clock?
You basically have to climb 292 steps to the clock room. There's no lift, so it's quite difficult getting things down. And that was one of the big problems on Monday. We had to lower this barrel down basically through the middle of the staircase, which, as you can imagine, was quite tricky, because the largest one weighs a quarter of a ton.
You must be in good shape.
Oh, I like to stay fairly fit, indeed.
What kind of reaction have you received from tourists watching the work?
Well, because the clock will be out of action for about 6 weeks, we've actually taken the unusual step, and it's never been done before, of installing an electric drive to the clock faces. So three of the clock faces are actually working fine at the moment. It's just that we have no bells at all.
But they're not hearing any ringing.
They're not hearing any rings, no. But with the heavy traffic you get in any major city these days, sometimes it's quite difficult to hear the rings anyway, I'm afraid.
Mike McCann is keeper of the Great Clock. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.